Welcome to Comics.
Episode 258. This week, we talk about
Vision, a little worse than human.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast begins.
Hey.
How's Overwatch?
Good. You not planning on giving it a try?
Nah. Grant was in the beta, and it's just not the type of thing I play.
All right.
But it looks good.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm not usually a first-person shooter kind of person.
Yeah, it's like first-person shooter mixed with MOBA, right?
Yeah, that's a really good way to do it. Because, I mean, there's a bunch of characters. I'm just terrible with aim. And there's a bunch of characters you don't need to aim, and not like just turrets, but like one of them has like a Tesla gun, so you just kind of got to get around the guy, and it kind of Tesla arcs over to him. It's kind of cool.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, I'm not so great with first person shooters unless it's like calculated sniping. So for like Mass Effect, I could play through on insanity, but Grant was watching me play Fallout 4, and every time he sees me play, he just starts like cracking up because he's like, "Why are you shooting everyone in the crotch?" And I'm like, "I'm trying to shoot them in the head. I really am. I'm just really bad at aiming." Oh man. So are you going to Fanime this weekend?
No, I won't be making it.
Grant and I are, well, Grant's coming back from Munich tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And yeah, he might be dead for the weekend. Who knows?
Are you going to go?
Yes, I bought badges for both of us. So hopefully he'll be able to make it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'm out $75 and that would suck. But yeah. I was going to go pick up the badges today. And then I was like, I wonder how that's going to be. And I just looked at the Fanime hashtag on Instagram and Twitter, and the line wraps around the building. It's like, I'm going to wait till Saturday. And I realized what it is everyone who goes there is like a student and school got out. So they all have free time to do this now. Whereas, you know, like, I'm like, I don't really want to, you know, rush to leave work on time to stand in a line for 3 hours.
Yeah, it's not worth it. It's tougher to go to a convention now because it's tough to go to any convention now because my wife went to Star Wars Celebration with me, and she fully understands the value of going to a convention and just kind of checking it out and having a good time, whether or not it's your specific fandom. So she was kind of into Star Wars, and then we went home and we watched Clone Wars, and she got way more into it. But Fanime, like, she'd be all down for going to Fanime for a day or two just to check out the cosplay and look at the weird stuff and just enjoy the general atmosphere of it and the artist alley and everything. So it sounds bad, but now I'd have to bring my wife along, which means I have to schedule with her, and which means that we have to take the baby for sure.
Yeah, get a babysitter or something.
Yeah, it's not like before where like I could just sneak out for half a day and go check it out a little bit. Now it's a full-day production. And that makes it tougher to coordinate, you know?
I know what you mean, because it's that way for us. The only thing, I guess, different is Grant is like equally invested in going as I am, so that makes it a bit easier. But at the same time, it's like we'll have to schedule around the dogs, make sure that they get let out and fed. So luckily I live about a mile from the convention center, so it's really easy for me to just, you know, pop back home to take care of it.
How you are that close.
Yeah
come to think, I wouldn't have thought that, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's It's more than a mile, but it's absolutely walking distance.
Yeah, you could totally do it. And there's plenty of public transit, too, because it's right in downtown. You could public transit it easy. Oh, did you see, go to our Facebook page. I posted a kind of, so DC is doing the Rebirth, and they did DC Rebirth Issue 1, which is pretty neat, except, not except. They did Issue 1, and at the end of Issue 1, there's a two-page splash that Ivan Reiss has done, and Ivan Reiss
I saw that.
Dude, he is awesome at doing these two-page, like, splashes with everybody in them, and I found it really interesting to look at who is in this two-page splash and who isn't, right? Like, Simon Baz and the new female Earth Green Lantern that they've, Jessica Cruz, that they've added for this, for the Rebirth, is in there, which is awesome. Guy Gardner's in there, Jon Stewart is in there, Hal Jordan's in there. Kyle Rayner's missing.
Where is he?
Yeah, he's missing, which is interesting. They have, like, all of the Marvels. You know, they have actual Captain Marvel, or sorry, Shazam, and they have Mary Marvel, Freddie Freeman, Eugene Choi, Pedro Pena, and Darla Dutt. Like, they have all of the Shazams.
And they have, let's see, well, Aquaman and Mira, and it's not bearded hook hand Aquaman.
No. It's cool. Which, cool younger Aquaman.
I mean, I like cool younger Aquaman, but there's always going to be a special place in my heart for, like, insane bearded hook-hand Aquaman.
See, and I would love... I do like that Aquaman better, because Aquaman is a... It's like... It's an underwater version of King Arthur, basically, which is really, really cool. And I don't think it's a mistake that his name is Arthur.
Yeah.
But I don't like how his driving motivation is get the pollution out of my ocean. Like, okay, bro. We've known this has been a problem for decades, and granted, it's still a big problem, and we shouldn't be ignoring it still, but I don't know.
It's like seeing something from the
Cold War. Yes!
It reminds me of, do you remember the commercial from, like, the 70s, like, 80s, of the, like, Indian shedding the single tear?
Yes.
That's what I think of when I think of, like, angry Aquaman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have all the Batgirls in it, too. Not as Batgirl. They have Cassandra Cain as Orphan, which is fine. It's Cassandra Cain again. Cassandra Cain hasn't been around in a long time. Wally West is back in here as a Flash. Well, as Kid Flash, I guess. A large Kid Flash? He's not like Kitty anymore. I don't know. Teenage Kid Flash, I guess.
Like Flash Jr.
Yeah, he's been gone for a while. And, Stephanie Brown is back as Spoiler. So not Batgirl yet, but still, you know, that character is back in this world. And there are two Blue Beetles. There's Jaime Reyes and Ted Kord.
Yes, I noticed that.
Which is cool, but then it makes me ask, where is Booster Gold?
Come to think of it, yeah. I do not see him
Know how you have Ted Kord without Booster Gold. It's, I mean, not like... How do you not have him? I mean, he might just not be in this spread, but I mean, looking at how many people are in this spread.
Yeah, why is he missing?
Yeah. Like, straight up Killer Croc is there, but not Booster Gold.
And it's kind of weird, too, like, how some of them are just way more prominent than I thought they'd be, and then some are, like, really background. So, like, Black Canary is, like, you can only tell who she is because of her outfit. Her face is kind of obscure, but then, like, Mira, Aquaman's lady friend, is, like, you know, right there in front.
Yeah.
That's surprising to me. I mean, of course, I'm sure, like, some of it is just, like, the artistic composition, right? Like, getting all the colors where you want them and stuff. It's an awesome piece.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, yeah, it's really interesting to look at it and figure out who's there and who's not. Like, Power Girl is not there. Kyle's not there. There's like two or three Supermen in here, one of them being Lex Luthor, which is weird.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
There's a Bizarro. Deadman? Come on, nobody likes Deadman. DC's been trying to make Deadman happen for a long time, and nobody likes Deadman.
Yeah.
There's a weird Huntress in here.
Deadman, I don't hate Deadman. I have like... I'm very apathetic toward him. I have no strong feelings.
Oh, is Plastic Man in here? Maybe David will be happy that there's no Plastic Man. Let me,
because he loves Plastic Man, right?
That's, yeah, there's favorite. No Plastic Man.
Oh.
Congrats. This is your DCU, David. He should be reading Rebirth. Anyway, yeah, if anybody hasn't gone and checked that out yet, it's definitely worth just, like, coming through. The Teen Titans have a lot of strong representation, too, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
They've always been, like, one of those teams that had that cartoon that was really popular, and DC's been trying for a long time to carry that popularity over into the comics, and it just hasn't happened. Maybe it will this time. Who knows?
Maybe.
Let's see.
Although, yeah, I think some of that is target audience, because, yeah, you know, like, younger kids are going to watch the Teen Titans show, and it is absolutely enjoyable by adults, but I think that it's hard to transfer that charm into comics, and, you know, if half your target audience is kids, maybe you're going to have a smaller readership because, well, comics are expensive.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they used to be... I don't know. There's a sense that they used to be cheaper, but they might not have been. They also have a lot more ads. At least I remember there being more ads. I don't know.
They have... Statistically, they do have more ads now. I remember going over this for some research in grad school, and, like, the number of ads per... What is it? Like, 23 pages has gone up by, like, 3 or 4. Since, I don't know, the past 15 years.
Yeah.
So, do you want to talk about the Vision?
Yeah, let's do it.
This week's comic.
This week we read Vision Volume 1, Little Less Than a Man, collecting the first 5, or was it 6 issues?
6.
First 6 issues of the new run of Vision from 2015, written by Tom King. This is our first entry in the Best of Marvel Comics series that we're going to do. But actually, this is the second Tom King book that we've done for our best 2015, because Tom King also did The Omega Men.
Yes.
And this is a much better comic than that one. Not that The Omega Men was bad. I like The Omega Men actually quite a bit, but this is... I really like this.
I am glad you think that, because I had the same feeling. In our notes, I said, this is how you do the first volume and get people to buy the second one.
Yeah.
Also... Oh my god. I actually feel very torn about including only 6 issues. I think that was a wonderful place for a cliffhanger.
Oh yeah.
But the next one comes out in November. The next trade. Oh. So I could buy single issues, but I'm not going to. I just don't have the storage space for something like that, and I like to keep things contained. I don't know if I can tolerate waiting until November. I don't know what choice I have, but it's I already feel a bit upset by this, so there's that.
Well, there's always Comixology. Get the digitals. I mean, if you don't have the physical space. Plus, but I don't know, those covers. These covers are really cool.
They are.
They really, really are. I really love, I don't know why, but one of the things I gravitate towards and find super interesting to read is the, like, suburbia serial killer kind of thing, which is why, like, in World of Warcraft, my favorite race is the Blood Elves. not because of anything else, but, like, they had this mana addiction and they ran out of a source of magic, so they enslaved a god and hid it in the basement.
And they
siphon magic off of this god's soul so that they can, like, sweep the streets and keep their city looking beautiful.
Yeah, what you gonna do?
It's so fucked up and twisted. And this has that same kind of feel. I mean, for a while, I'm like, oh, this is not gonna turn out well for Virginia. This is just not. It feels just like Virginia is losing it. And then the kids kind of start to lose it. And at the end, you're like, oh no, but Vision has lost it too. And you're like, oh no, we're all just screwed.
Well, I think this was actually a really clever thing for them to do. We're taking the narration as fact. at the start, right? We're hearing like, okay, the Visions moved in at this point and they did this and this and blah, blah, blah. But at the end, it's, what's her name? Is it Agatha?
Yeah, Agatha.
Is that her name? The old woman? Yeah.
Yes.
And she's telling the Avengers what's happening here. So how much of this story that we just read is actually told from a fair viewpoint, from an unbiased one?
That's true. Yeah, because we get that revelation in the episode, or we get that revelation in the issue where she's talking about P versus NP.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't a problem I've heard of before, but like is super interesting and relevant to the themes in this comic.
Yeah, I actually ended up looking that one up, and that was a really interesting narrative device to use.
Yeah.
That explanation. I don't even know where to start with this. Like, there are so many questions.
So I'll start off somewhere then. You were talking about how P versus NP was a really cool narrative place to start. I appreciated the way that Tom King took great effort to make the Visions say things that normal people say in their everyday lives, but say them in a way that feels robotic.
Yes. Oh, and here's the thing for me, like, where I really got wrapped up in this. And it's just Vision himself trying to make this family and achieve normalcy. And these robots, they're supposed to be really smart, right? They're not robots per se, but they're definitely superior and logic-based, right? Like, I get the impression that Vision is, he's kind of like Data from Star Trek.
Yeah.
And if they're trying to be so logical about things, yet trying to encompass what humanity is, how throughout this whole thing can they not see how poorly they're doing? That blows my mind.
Well, I mean, that's what Agatha is trying to explain, right? Like, they are, as much as they are human-like, they still are machines, and they would still operate as machines. So he's trying to build the algorithms and build the shortcuts to make the family work, right? Like, he's done everything. This actually reminds me of an episode of Voyager where
the doctor
tries to make a holodeck family, and B'Elanna goes in and she's like, oh, no, this is not what family's like. I'm going to change the characters so you actually know what family is. And the doctor just deletes the program because he doesn't like what she did to his family. And she's like, you can't do that. Your family is your family. You don't get to choose what they turn out to be.
And in the end, he has to suffer and live through that problem. Oh, I can't believe you brought that up, because I was going to say that too, which just means that this comic has like really strong associations with that episode.
Yeah.
Oh, if we thought of that independently, that's a bit shocking considering the show's 20 years old.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, but so Vision is doing everything that the algorithm in his mind says he needs to do to build a normal family, right? He's the husband with the stable job and the income and the respectable career. He's got the wife. He's got the two kids, and I love this at the end, because it's the most twisted way possible, right? But, like, his family goes through a rough patch, so he gets a dog.
Oh, that was the only part that I could not stand about this comic.
Right, but what I love about that moment, even though it was really tough, I hate senseless, like, animal cruelty, even in any kind of fiction. I don't enjoy reading it all. It's not something I think needs to be represented. But that is something that a family would do, right? Like, a family goes through a rough patch and everything's kind of weird. So, you know, the dad brings home a dog to kind of distract everyone and bring everyone back together over the dog. And you know it's only going to last a week until somebody's cleaning up the dog poop or whatever. And the dog presents its own set of problems, and then you just added more problems. Like, we know it's not going to work, but that is such a human thing to do. Like, Vision is embodying humanity in some of the worst ways possible as he's trying to be human, but he doesn't, like, he's doing it not realizing he's doing it. And all of his conscious decisions are not human. if that makes any sense. Like, if he just gave in to what he felt and stopped doing what he thought was right, he'd be doing such a better job.
Yeah, and so here's actually what puzzles me. We know that his brainwave pattern is based off of Wonder Man. Mm-hmm. Is Virginia based off the Scarlet Witch?
I'm not sure where Virginia's comes from.
Okay, because I feel like Virginia was the great destabilizer here. She was obviously, even if she were human, she clearly has problems. Like the violent tendencies, the anger issues, and it's unfair for her, obviously, because if she were human and someone came into her house and attacked her family and she killed the guy defending her family, everyone would say that it wasn't her fault. But at the same time, it amazes me that Vision created this family that is so unaware of the consequences of their unusual nature. Because they're, like, super strong and can fly and shit. And did no one bother to, like, program it in or sit them down and just say, like, look, you gotta be super aware of this. But luckily, I'm on the Avengers, so I can help solve problems. It's, like, that breakdown in communication was really interesting. Because I think, lack of communication is something that I talked about in, I can't remember. It was a recent episode where it just drove me nuts. Like, why aren't these people talking to each other? But here it felt like part of Virginia's character. Like, she's a bit psychotic.
It's the pressure of their situation, right? Like, nobody would question if, you know, somebody came into my house and my wife instinctively, to defend our daughter, grab the nearest thing, and I don't know, let's say it's a baseball bat. I don't have a baseball bat in the house, but let's say it was. And let's say my wife, you know, accidentally bludgeoned the guy to death after he intruded into our home with a gun, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he came in with clear intent just to do harm. Nobody would deny that it was self-defense, and she wouldn't be charged with much of anything, I don't think. But for Virginia, it's not excusable. Oh, poor doggy.
He's dreaming.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. For Virginia, though, it's not excusable. Not only because her husband is an Avenger, right? And all of the PR and problems for her husband's life surrounding that, mm-hmm. but she's well aware of the level of scrutiny that her and her family are receiving in just their local neighborhood. If this gets out, there's no way their family can live anywhere like this, anywhere in the country. It would just be impossible. So I think she gets carried away. She gets carried away in a manner that is entirely reasonable, but she can't process it or work with it in a way that normal people can.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of the thing. We say that the Vision is, by the end, not capable of doing it either. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what makes it interesting, because so much of this is what responsibility does someone who's powered have over a normal human? If this series of events were happening to an average person, like you said, like, it'd be self-defense. And that's kind of the thing, too. It's not just the level of scrutiny. What actually surprised me a bit is if Virginia has such capacity for knowledge and information. She's obviously capable of retaining and processing information. She seems like a very logical person. I'm a bit surprised that she reacted out of anger, but then hid it, thinking that this would actually protect her family more than, you know, talking through it with the Vision. Because I think even as a superhero, it's pretty excusable if someone waltzes into your home and impales your child that you would react very poorly to that.
Yeah, I mean, oh, that's like in the moment, her decision to bury the body, right? Doesn't feel terrible. You know, it feels like, okay, you did this, you clearly fucked up, and you have to cover this up. You have to, Virginia. As an external observer, I don't see a way where this ends where she can't try to cover up that the death of that supervillain. I mean, it's even a supervillain. Nobody would even care that much. But the fact that she, you know, killed a guy in the suburbs, right? Even that excused, even if you could say it's self-defense and everybody excuses her for that, there's the element of the fact that, oh, this family is attracting supervillains to our neighborhood. You know, every part of this needs to be covered up. So I'm like there with her as she buries the body. But then when Vision comes home and she has to explain herself, I also wouldn't want to tell him right away. Mm-hmm. Because she's not sure where he's going to be, right? Because he's been saying all this stuff like, oh, we need to protect our family. You know, we need to do all this, the important stuff. He's valuing the appearance of normalcy, and having a supervillain buried in the backyard doesn't lend yourself towards normalcy, you know? And I don't think she's entirely sold that he's going to be on her side.
Yeah, I think that's true. But at the same time, you know, I think it's one of those things where the truth will out.
Yeah.
Eventually. So, there's no way someone's not going to eventually find out, especially if they have the Avengers looking for him, for instance. Like, Vision kind of casually remarks, they looked for him, he's not on Earth, and he's not on Earth, so he's just not anywhere. Where the fuck is he? And she's like, oh, that's weird.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, when you're dealing with these circumstances, it seems like really, I understand the fear motive here, but it would be best to protect your family if you just, I don't know, like, told somebody, because the truth will out, and okay, so maybe the neighbors take it badly, but you can always reestablish relations. It gets worse when you're like actually in situations where the neighbors are dying, which is where this leads up to, right?
Yeah. Which, and then like the interaction between Viv and CK makes that scene work, right? Because otherwise the father's just a bigoted asshole. Mm-hmm. You know? But they're and then also without that interaction, you don't get, like, you wouldn't feel bad about CK getting shot necessarily. You would feel bad that now Virginia has to cover this up too. I mean, to the extent that Virginia is sympathetic. But that interaction that CK has, and the fact that Viv treasures it, it's the moment where Viv is allowed to kind of feel normal, where she might be getting there. And this guy, CK, He couldn't with Vin, with the son, but he obviously did get some kind of attachment to Viv as a lab partner and begin to see her as another person through being her lab partner. And like that is the little piece that they've all been working toward. And it just got shot in the face.
Yeah, and I mean, the things like regarding how the populace fears them as a generality, in some ways, I think, yeah, it is justified and people will be bigots. But the scene with CK just coming out and saying, like, hey, I think you're cool, and that's cool. Like, he doesn't have the biggest vocabulary.
Yeah, well, but, you know, high schooler.
It was like a nice, honest sentiment of, hey, I think you're starting to fit in. And it gives Viv some humanity too. And oh man, there's a bit of foreshadowing there too, and where it says in that recollection that her life is not very long, but in the time she has, she often goes back to remember this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, this is going to end in ruin. On the other hand, I'm starting to wonder if any of this has happened at all.
Yeah, like you were saying, because, I mean, this is all now part of Agatha's vision. This whole first six issues, the way it's framed is this is all Agatha's vision, which is kind of cool because then you think all the way back to the first issue where George and his wife are going next door to the visions to give them cookies, and the narrator says one of the visions will burn George's house down. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that was, when I got to that part, I immediately was just like, what the fuck am I reading right now? But it was interesting. It was a good hook because it was like, oh, okay, superheroes having suburban life. Yes, I've seen that. Oh, someone's going to go insane. Like, I wanted to know more.
Yeah, and then it's good framing because then as I'm reading this, I'm wondering, I'm constantly looking to see which one is going to end up going insane. And it turns out all of them go insane.
Yeah.
So it really could be any of, I started out thinking which one of them is going to go insane and burn down the house. And then by the end, I'm like, oh, which one's going to get there first?
I gotta say, though, I was surprised when the vision started to snap. I thought he had more wherewithal than that.
I mean, I think it's the pressure that they're all under because they can't be normal when that's all they want to do. They want to be human. They want to be normal. They want to fit in. That's the only thing that they want. And even though the kids and the wife don't understand why necessarily, they're willing to go along with it because it's what Vision wants. So all they need is an equal shot. But because they can't get it, that's why all of this works, why they all have to go insane, and why Vision has to go down that road eventually.
Yeah, and I mean, I liked it. I think I like it more because I didn't expect it, you know? It's just, it's so off-putting that someone like him would just, like, lose his shit, you know? Because there's so many levels to it, too. First off, he's an Avenger, right? He's supposed to be calm and collected in the face of danger and crisis, yada yada. And then he's the Vision. He's, like, you know, super calm and logical. He thinks things through and doesn't understand the irrationality of humans. And, well, I guess he understands it now.
Yeah. My favorite line from, I think this is the first issue, he says, to assert as truth, that which has no meaning is the core mission of humanity.
Yeah.
Like, what?
And, oh, God, it's what he's doing here, too. I mean, making a synthetic family and saying, these are my people, this is my family, I love them, and I will care for them. That is exactly that. But there is, you know, as a human, you have to look at that and say, yeah, that is actually really valid. Family's super important. And I totally understand why he'd do this. So so much of the writing here just works on so many levels.
Yeah. I think it all comes down to that last issue of P versus NP. And not just the level where it is what Agatha's describing. Like, is it an equation that can simply be solved, or is it not? You know, is the universe ultimately knowable, or is it not? It also comes down to those two sides fighting within these people, right? Like, mm-hmm. Vision having as part of his algorithm, do anything to protect your family, right? Like, that's part of his algorithm for what it means to have a family and to be human, is that family does anything for each other, especially your family, right? Like, you do anything for your children. You do anything to save your wife. You do anything, right? That's mm-hmm. part of the P equation that he's built. But the outcomes of that equation are NP. And so he has to, like, what he has to do to protect this family particularly is so insanely above and beyond anything that's in the algorithms that he has to define the parameters of family, it's so far beyond that it destroys every concept of what that algorithm should mean. he can't. That algorithm can't exist, even though that's what he's working off of. It can't exist for him.
I mean, he's stuck in a bit of a paradox with this, because the thing that he must do to save his family will destroy his family.
And we all know machines work well off of paradoxes.
Oh, yeah. This won't cause any problems. He'll be fine.
I think one of my favorite little... This comic did a really good job of building metaphors all the way throughout. Like P versus MP and stuff. But I think my favorite was the water vase of something law? Wow, what was it?
Oh, yeah. And can't hold any flowers.
Yeah, because the waters are toxic and would kill whatever flowers you put in it. So the question isn't why aren't there flowers in the vase? The question is, who would make such a vase?
Yeah.
And I love that in the context of this family. Like, the question isn't why can't they be human? It's why are they even trying?
Or even more than that, why did the Vision try to build a family?
Yeah. Especially his first one died.
Yeah. It's just, it's so dark, too. There's just so many things that build up in his personality here. This idea, like, you know, the world owes him because he saved everyone 37 times.
Yeah, I love that issue where he goes through them all, too.
Yeah, and he's just like, aren't I owed something for that? But obviously people don't seem to think so. And it's just like that level of bitterness, and then the fact that he understands that people feel this way about him, but it seems to drive him to try to be more and more independent. Like, we see him go to the other Avengers for help once when he has Tony Stark help him get enough power to, reboot Viv. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, he doesn't go to them with any issues. And granted, part of that is he doesn't know there are any issues for a large part of this, I think. True. But, you know, it's, you kind of feel like he's trying to really be autonomous as the head of his household, being this independent man. And it's just sad. He's faced with, like, the Don Draper problem.
Yeah, and he has that, like, that hardcore line between work and family, and he's defining his time with the Avengers as work, mm-hmm. right? Instead of defining it as being a hero or doing cool stuff with his friends, he's defining it as only work, which then makes, like, you can't go to those people with your problems. Like, that's not appropriate. I don't go to work with my home problems.
Yeah, but that's the weird thing, because they did start as his friends, and he's just kind of cutting them off, I feel. Maybe I'm mixing up timelines or something, or this is, like, a different, like, reboot of things, but I was kind of under the impression that he was closer to them than that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought so as well. I also really like that scene, though, when he's fighting, Giganta? I want to say Gigantor, but I know that's not right. But the giant monster thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the phone with his wife, and his wife is, like, saying why he needs to be home, and he's like, but I'm kind of saving the city. Like, what I'm doing is kind of important here. And she delivers the oh-so-human line of, I know they need you there, but we need you here too.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, that is a line that comes up in, like, every sitcom ever.
Oh my god, I read that too, and I was like, huh, you know, I don't think that's actually being a cliche right here. I think that's targeted.
Yeah. And I love when they accidentally stumble into moments that are insanely human and they don't even realize they're doing it.
Yeah. Oh man. It's
because it's the shitty things and not the right. Like, they're not having, you know, the dinner party. They're having the fights.
Yeah, and it's, well, the parts where they're like saying, "Oh, you are so smart and we will respect you." You know, that's not family. Family is being able to be with people through thick and thin and like through a lot of strife sometimes. If they were just people you got along with, you know, splendidly, they might be related, but they're friends. It's people that with whom you forge really deep connections that make you have like that kind of level of like being able to stick through it through animosity. And that again is just a really human trait, and they don't even know they're doing it. And it's so funny because Vision, he looks at like all the nice things about humanity, like having a family and getting along with the neighbors and having everyone sit around for a kind of like family meeting instead of dinner.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to get like this very stereotypical nuclear family thing going. But those are the times when it seems the most false.
Yeah. Like they're building some structure that doesn't really exist organically.
Yeah, I think the only time where they had like a really happy moment that seemed real was when they're throwing the football. And
That's
it
exactly what I was
starts,
thinking of.
yeah. Well, it starts with him berating the kids, like, "Why are you doing this?" And Viv has my favorite line. She says, "We will achieve normalcy tomorrow."
Yes.
And I
That's a very
really.
natural, like that is such a human response.
It's just like, ah, it's that Vision doesn't get it because if you were human, you wouldn't be trying to achieve normalcy like that, you know? Like everyone wants to fit in, but as a human, you would know that nobody does.
Yeah.
Everyone's like a bit off or odd or something, you know? Like we're all different. And it's just this sense of like, we're gonna put the quest for like being part of the Brady Bunch aside for just now.
I was
And
thinking Leave It to Beaver.
yes, that's a better one. And we're gonna toss a damn football. And I really like that scene.
Gonna toss a damn football that has a racial slur on it.
Yeah.
Like that's what I think that's what he was braiding. I'm like, where the hell did you get a football that says Fighting Redskins?
Well, I like how he very specifically is like, "No, children, your mascot is a colorful bull in a tricorn hat." Like,
Yes.
okay, Dad. The only thing this comic was missing was one of the kids screaming, "You're not my real dad," at him.
We might get there. We might. Because if you want to see something send Vision off the end, I think that would be
Oh, man.
because not only has he saved the Earth 37 times, but he created you, damn it.
I
And he
don't
can
think I could
uncreate you.
stand it. I do not think I could bear to watch that unfold. That would be horrible.
Yeah, I see. That's the thing is, I don't think that they're going to turn on each other. I think because this comic is building such a dynamic between what it means to be family and what lengths you'll go to for your family, I think they'll pull together and defend each other. And they're pulling together and defending each other is what destroys the world. Just like as Agatha's saying, we talk about how this is a framed narrative and we don't know necessarily how much of it is true and how much of it has actually even happened yet. But I completely believe her when she says that this family that she's shown us and this dynamic that she's told us, they'll destroy the world for each other. I totally
But
believe it.
yeah, they have some real problems.
Yeah.
I kind of think that what might happen is he will realize that the only way to achieve his ideals is to not destroy the world, and he's going to end up shutting down his family.
Ooh. No, I think no, there'd be some Deus Ex Machina bull where he takes their brainwaves and reincorporates them back into his own, so they're always a part of him.
Oh, of
Like
course. It
I
has
think there'd be
to.
something like that.
They're not going to go like ultra dark with this, I think, but
No.
it's not going to end well. I already know that.
Like, there's no way it can.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you talk about how that would be too dark, and this comic does definitely have a strong tinge of darkness, I want to say, but what makes that the tone, the twisted dark tone of this comic really, really work is the very bright, cheerful art.
Mm-hmm.
Because that whole suburbia serial killer vibe that I really like and dig, that works only if the comic is shiny. And this comic is so bright and so shiny. Every day in this neighborhood is a sunny day. You know? Their house is beautiful until Virginia wrecks. I'm guessing it was Virginia that wrecked it at the end of the issue 6. It doesn't say what happened and why the house was wrecked.
Yeah.
It just says the next day, and then the house is completely messed up and George's dog is now their dog. So it doesn't say. That's the only time though that like their house is unkempt. Otherwise their house is gorgeous. It is really well arranged. Like Vision very proudly wanted somebody to come and visit, and somebody came and visit, and yeah, be proud of that home, bro. That's nice.
Yeah.
You know, and all of this incredibly shiny, bright exterior that the art portrays is what really makes this tone work. This is a really, really good combination of author and artist. And that's something that is super important and that really, really drives a book when you can make it fit. I mean, there's tons of times where it's just a good comic book and it's a good comic writer and it has a good comic book tone. And the artist then is a good comic book artist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jim Lee. Jim Lee's a fantastic artist, but he is very much a comic book artist and a comic book kind of style. And he has range within there, but that's his jam. I think part of the reason this works so great is the same reason that, like, Batman the Animated Series works great. Like, Bruce Timm drawing on black paper fits the tone of that writing for that show so awesome. You know? When you find that perfect matchup, that's what drives this medium better than anything else. And that's why I think this comic is so good, is just the matchup of Tom King and what he's trying to write and achieve here, and Gabriel Hernandez Walta and what he's drawing for this. It's such a good match.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's like you said, everything's so bright and the tone. Have you noticed that when Virginia goes anywhere, even at night, she kind of glows? Like, her hair is really bright green, and she gives off kind of her own light. And she's perhaps the darkest character in this.
Yeah.
I think that it's actually kind of telling how she stands out on the page so much. She draws attention to herself. Or, like, the scene where Agatha eats the petal to see the future. Mm-hmm. It's black and white, except for the blood, you know? Yeah. And it's just like, well, here's visual foreshadowing for you.
The blood and then the petals of that plant.
Yeah.
I also really want to go through, and speaking of visual cues, I really want to go through and look at all the times where the visions are floating above normal humans and when they're not.
Mm.
Right? Like, Virginia enters CK's father's house on the ground, and CK starts to threaten her, and she starts to float up. Like, mm-hmm. to kind of threaten him, sure. But then also, when she's visiting him in the hospital, she's floating, not standing. When the kids come back to school together, they're floating above students as they come in. And once they're in the high school, like, they're back down walking. I know there's a meaning behind that visual differentiator and the fact that Vision the entire time walks. Vision doesn't float.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Right? So, like, Vision, he floats and flies away when he's in costume, right? But when he's in his suit and tie, he doesn't. He walks. And I don't know if it's a visual cue of their separation from humanity, like their separation from us who have to walk on the ground. I really want to go through and, like, all of this stuff. Like, after reading it, these first 6 issues, I want to go through and read them again much more closely and look for all these little tidbits.
Oh, that is fascinating. I'm thinking about it, though, and it makes a lot of sense that she rises up when she's about to attack CK's dad.
Oh, yeah.
The part where she's over him in the hospital, that could be read in so many different ways, like a continued threat. For instance, I mean, no one knows that she was there that night and this dude's in a coma or something, right? So there could be the sense of threat, like she knows that if he wakes up, he could tell and everything will be ruined. It could be like just a sense of superior power, or it could be almost guardianship. Like she's worried about what she did and if this man will ever recover. There's so many ways you could take it.
Yeah. I kind of want her to kill him. because then everything's tied up nicely. I mean, then it's the perfect, like, well, everything's tied up with a bow and and nobody knows about the supervillain in the backyard, and now nobody knows about this incident, and nobody knows anything's wrong. There's that detective who has a hint, and if the Avengers come sniffing around, there's enough weird stuff happening around that it merits more investigation. But on the surface, everything's fine.
That concerns me, though, because if she does that, she's going to become the type of person that Vision would not want as a wife. I mean, I know that he is probably going to love her despite many of the things that she does here, but I think that people also draw a line, and killing a helpless man who's in a coma is probably past that moral, like, event horizon for him, I'd have to imagine.
Well, I mean, even punching, I mean, that moment in his house is a heated moment, and it's hard to be reasonable and have a measured response in that moment. But she didn't have to do anything to the father, right? Like, she could have just gone intangible. She didn't have to punch him into a coma.
There's that, but at the same time, I think some of it was a reaction to him shooting his son, because she turns around to see what happened, and her immediate reaction is just like, no!
Yeah.
You know, like, I think she has the gut feeling of, oh my god, a child just got shot. Do something, fix, you know, like, I think she's being a sympathetic character in that moment, and that she's reacting out of panic like a person would.
I think that's half of this comic, is her reacting out of panic.
Yeah.
And I mean, you get the initial, what I like about that scene too, is you get the initial no, right, in one panel. And I think that's the gut response to the fact that a kid is dead. Mm-hmm. And then the next panel, she goes, no, no, no. And I think that's her realizing that this is not her fault, but it's going to be her fault.
Yeah.
That first no, I think, is the gut reaction. And then I think is the realization of what the hell just happened to her. All of it altogether. Not only is this guy now going to let out the video of her burying the supervision, burying the supervillain. So that's going to happen. And now this is going to get blamed on her. And none of it's her fault. Like, in her mind, none of it is. I mean, she could have done stuff better along the way, but no, this is all totally reasonable.
Yeah, and I have a huge amount of sympathy for her here, honestly, because the guy's like, you killed my son, but okay, no.
She didn't.
No. You know what happens when you have a fucking gun in your house and you're shooting it at someone who can go incorporeal? Well, the whatever's behind them is going to get shot.
Well, this is what happens when you have a loaded gun in the house.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry if anybody listening to this is a super gun nut, but I am super not, even though having been raised around gun nuts, like, statistics show and all reasonable evidence shows that just having a gun in the house raises the chances of gun violence, like, no duh. And he's waving it around fully loaded, and he's going into this situation charged, ready to pull the gun out, and ready to fire, whether or not it's gonna do anything. Like, obviously it's not. She has the same powers as Vision, and he doesn't just fight street thugs. You know?
Yeah. I mean, whether or not you believe in gun control or more guns, I'm like, what's the opposite?
Need more guns.
More guns, yeah. It's irresponsible and stupid to fire or to have a loaded gun when you are going to be in a position of emotional distress. and to start firing it willy-nilly in your home when there is a child there.
Yeah. Why even have the kid there? Send the kid away to a friend's house overnight. Like, just send him out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Why even have the kid there? I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, like, if you're going to be blackmailing your kid's classmate's mom, maybe send your kid away. It's just, you know, that whole thing could have been prevented if... And obviously the guy thinks that he's in good control because he is a trained, you know, what did he say, Marine Corps? So he's in the Marines.
Yeah, but, something like that.
And, you know, that's actually kind of an interesting parallel because... Virginia keeps ending up in these situations where she thinks she's in control and then just like loses it and then something terrible happens. Because what he does here is not that different than what Virginia does to the Grim Reaper. He says, "Holy shit, my kid is in danger and now I am immediately in peril because this woman is going to attack me," and he fires. But just like she should not have bludgeoned the Grim Reaper to death with a cookie sheet, he should not have started firing his gun.
Yeah.
So, oh, man. Virginia is such an interesting character because you kind of get the sense that she's a really well-written mix of good and evil. And I mean evil because she has good intentions. She wants she wants to protect her children. She wants to hold her family together, and she wants to achieve her husband's goals, or help him with that, you know, make it so they're all normal people mm-hmm. in a neighborhood. But her passion, I think it nosedives into moral darkness at times.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
I mean, I think some of that, she's making calculated choices, and they are just evil. So, it's so weird that she is the villain. And, you know, this is like, I hate the trope. I hate the trope where you have a hero and then they're dating someone or have a romantic interest and that person suddenly takes off their mask and is like, haha, I was a supervillain all along, and everyone's sad. No, this is a really good way to do it because she never... meant to trick anyone. It's like really tragic, this downward spiral she ends up on. You know, it's not like it's hokey trickery. She's doing things that she thinks are right, but then justifying them with first like maybe moral ambiguity and then later just like bad decisions.
3 weeks later, still shitting on Midnighter.
Oh my god. You know,
the hokey reveal. I've been a supervillain all along.
God, the hokiest part of that reveal is he walks away into another room for 2 seconds and comes back in like full supervillain regalia.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of reasons that didn't work in that comic, but
yeah. And you know, I think it happened in something else as well, where someone, it was in Omega Men, where it turns out that they were just tricking Kyle Rayner after the girl seduces him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's like, I've been an Omega Man all along, ha ha.
Ha ha.
And he's just like, oh no, angel of God, help me.
Yeah,
it was really weird. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I think Virginia is well done here because she's the villain, not villain.
Yeah.
I think both sides of the argument for and against her are very arguable.
Yeah. All right. You ready to rate this?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go first then, since you're ready.
Go for it. Do it.
I'm going to give this a 5 straight up. Because, you know... I'm having the same feeling I had when we did Alex and Ada. There's so often that we get comics that we know are good comics, and we sit down to talk about them, and all we can say is, oh, this was so good. This was so good. Mm-hmm. Wasn't this good? Yes, this was good. That didn't happen here. This comic, we sat down, and we've been talking for, like, straight up an hour, and I feel like we've barely brushed the surface of what we can talk about. And I want to read this again to go through it and get all the little tidbits and things that are in here in the art and in the fact that now we know it's Agatha narrating and all, like, I want to read this two or three more times. And I think all those times where you read a comic and you go, oh, that was a good comic. And then you just, all you can say is that was a good comic. I think those are really fours. And the ones like this, this is like a true, this is a real five for me. This is like, this is phenomenal because it's the perfect marriage between art and artist and author and content is like the themes here. We didn't even get into half of the stuff here, you know? And this is just, yeah, this is a five because it's a phenomenal comic and I want to read it two or three more times and I can't wait for volume two, just like you. But I want it on my shelf, so I'm going to wait for volume two.
Sounds good.
What do you got?
I'm also giving it a five. Yeah, I think I'm going to be in like a great amount of distress until November. was it last week? I said, what makes me rate things well is whether or not I remember them a year from now. On the one hand, I think, yes, I will remember this. Like you said, it really does remind me of Alex and Ada. And that's one of the best comics we've ever read for this show. So there's that. But also, I liked this enough, and I never do this. I keep a planner where I put only the most important dates, like my best friend's wedding or people close to me's birthdays and like the work projects where if I forget them, I will get fired, that kind of stuff. And I put down for like the month of November, you know, Vision Volume 2 is coming out. So this has been deemed important enough in my life, but I think that's because it truly was an engaging comic. I spent the whole time being like, what's going to happen next? I devoured it. I thought a lot about it in the few days since I read it. It's occupied my thoughts. And if I were going to downrate it, I would say it's just because I don't think that was actually a really appropriate place to end this trade. I think that it's too far from a resolution of this amount of tension. And when you have, and it's too far from the date of the next publication. And when you have a cliffhanger that heavy, you're going to lose your audience. You got to be really careful about how you parse out trades, because I think cliffhangers are good, but you need some degree of denouement. Mm-hmm. And I think like killing a dog and destroying the house and then having the Avengers come after them, like as an act of war.
There's no denouement in there.
Yeah, there's nothing like winding down about that. But, you know, I don't know if the author gets to decide what goes into the trade or if that's just like, you know, the editors or whatever.
That's there's a specific editor at each company that makes that decision.
Huh, okay. Well, I think that person could have considered that the next trade's coming out in November and planned around that.
Well, this one technically isn't out yet. This one, the trade for this isn't out until July? Yeah.
Okay. But I don't want any more individual issues. You know? Like, I like things in contained volume. So, I'm a whiner. I get that. That doesn't diminish my rating. I think it's just a thing to take in consideration. Not even just for, like, if you happen to work at Marvel and put together trades, but also like just as a writer or someone who looks at stories, like what is an appropriate stopping point? And I don't think this is it, but otherwise I love this. It was a five.
Nice. Nice. All right. So far Marvel's best of is owning DC's best of.
Yep. I think it's gonna.
And I think it's going to continue because next week we're going to read A-Force War Zones. In this comic, okay, the stuff for DC, I think our primary complaint was that it felt really social justice-y, and it felt a whole lot like DC was making us aware of the fact that they are being inclusive, you know? Mm-hmm. The first one was a gay protagonist, the second one was somebody that they made super Hispanic, so super Hispanic, or stereotypical Hispanic, and the third one was a female character that was so female that she was, you know, super... super feminine. Not super feminine. Super girl trope, I'll say.
Yeah, that's it. We felt pandered to.
Yeah. So next week is Marvel's attempt to do that with A-Force Warzones. A-Force is the all-female version of the Avengers with She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel. And there is one or two characters that that originate from this comic that are actually really, really popular in the comics community, specifically Tumblr. But I don't want to ever cite Tumblr. But that's where a huge amount of the comic book community hangs out. So yeah, it'll be interesting to read. I'm excited about this one. It's on my pull list. I've had this trade sitting on my shelf for a while. I'm excited to finally be reading it. We'll see. I'm generally more bullish on Marvel than DC these days, so I'm genuinely excited to read this one. Next week is A-Force Warzones, and the two authors are G. Willow Wilson and Marguerite Bennett. Two very awesome female creators. Yeah, the first five issues of A-Force Secret Wars. So that'll be interesting. I framed it in the whole social justice kind of thing, but I'm genuinely excited for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I like social justice in comics. I just don't want to feel like it's a marketing ploy.
Right,
that's all.
Like, I totally agree. There should be more gay characters in comics. There should be more religious Hispanic characters in comics. And there should be more women and girls in comics. There
should and Asians.
Be, yeah, there should be all of these things.
Yeah.
It should feel organic.
Yes. Make your characters real people and people will love them.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
Yeah, and I think what helps is that the characters that carry A-Force are ones that are established as being strong female characters before this team comes together, like She-Hulk, Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel. They're established, strong, well-written characters. Medusa from the Inhumans is in there, too, and she's baller as hell.
Excellent.
Dazzler's on the cover. Like, it's established, long-term, legacy, strong female characters. That's a good... That's such a good place to start from.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, that's next week. Until then, everyone, goodbye.
Goodbye.